Hi, I'm Sarah.
And I'm Megan.
We're two moms with 8 kids between us, from little to grown.
We're in different areas of the country and in different stages of life.
But we both know that motherhood's a lot easier when real moms share tips and encouragement.
And remind you that it's really all going to be okay.
We're not experts. We're parents who've been there.
We're not perfect. We're real. Welcome to the Mom Hour.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to episode 229 of the Mom Hour. I'm Sarah Powers, here as always with Megan Francis. Hey, Megan.
Hey, Sarah. How you doing?
I am great. We are talking today about table manners and social graces. Do you have your pinky up, Megan?
Oh, I'm sorry. I should have said, hello, Sarah. I mean, how would you ask, how are you doing in a more socially graceful way?
How do you do?
How do you do? Top of the morning to you.
I always wish I was someone who said, how do you do? I think every once in a while I hear someone say that of an older generation. I think it's kind of cool. We should bring it
back. What I think is funny is we start talking about social graces and I somehow go to a Cockney accent. Like, nope, not same.
I like anyway. That in our cultural consciousness, anything British is just by default more well-mannered than.
Well, wait, actually, top of the morning to you would be Irish, I think. I don't even know. It's old school sounding. It's oldie fashioned.
Well, what we're really talking about is teaching table manners and in general, social graces to our kids. And this is so funny because as moms of, you know, my youngest is 6, your youngest is 10. We have been through the years where you're like, please just don't belch at the table.
Right,
you know, like
yes.
you have to lower your standards so much and you kind of worry like, am I teaching them the right things? So I think we're here to tell you most of this kind of works itself out. Peer pressure, modeling, yada, yada. So we're going to have fun with this today. We are going to talk about how we've taught manners to our kids over the years. But I also want to say to the moms whose dinner tables look a hot mess right now, even if you do nothing different and just get through it, it'll be okay.
Yep. Agreed.
All right, well, let's take a break and then we will dive right in. Megan, we're all about the cozy fall feels around here lately, even if we still have to pretend a little bit. And one of the ways the kids and I have been getting in the mood for fall is books and audiobooks from our sponsor, Epic. Epic is the leading digital library for kids 12 and under, and they are nurturing a love of reading and learning in millions of kids around the world.
Yes, you might have seen our blog post roundup of cozy audiobooks for fall. So The Secret Garden is one of my all-time favorite fall reads, and we've been listening to it, and it just gives it such an extra layer when you get to hear those accents and everything else. It's really fun.
I love those accents. Well, every book and video on Epic is handpicked by their expert team, which makes sure that kids are reading and learning in a safe, age-appropriate, kid-friendly environment. My kids are especially drawn to the nonfiction books, the stuff about animals and science experiments, that kind of thing. And it's so nice to have a practically limitless source for those at our fingertips. Epic works on a tablet or device, and each kid gets their own login and profile, all for one monthly subscription price.
More than 10 million children have read more than 500 million books on Epic's platform, and we're going to get you started with 2 months free. Epic is normally $7.99 a month, which is a great deal, but if you use promo code MOMHOUR when you sign up for an Epic subscription at getepic.com, you'll get your first 2 months totally free. Again, that's getepic.com. Use promo code MOMHOUR when you sign up for a subscription, and you'll get your first 2 months free.
We are welcoming back our very favorite beverage today as a sponsor.
Yep, and I just opened up a can of my new favorite flavor of LaCroix sparkling water, hibiscus.
I also enjoy the hibiscus, but I still go most often for the grapefruit, I think.
Yeah, my go-to is still coconut, but I kind of feel like hibiscus is going to give it a run for its money.
Well, no matter what your favorite flavor is, all of LaCroix sparkling water flavors are derived from natural sources with natural fruit essences. They've got mango, tangerine, key lime in the classic flavors. And then there's the curate flavors, the ones in the skinny cans, and they have a little bit of a bolder flavor. I like the blackberry cucumber from the curates.
Yeah, and even the ones that pack in more flavor do it all with zero calories, zero sweeteners, and zero sodium. So LaCroix was really developed for people like me because I always want to have a fun beverage to sip, but I don't want a bunch of sugar or caffeine all the time. And I'm really excited about their new line of flavors called Nicola, which has coconut cola, Cubana, which is like a mojito. Super excited about that one. And Coffee Exotica, which is like coffee and cola, plus the original La Cola, which is strangely good. And all of them contain no caffeine and no alcohol. Only naturally essenced flavor, which I enjoy.
That is amazing. Well, LaCroix is made only with non-GMO flavor ingredients that have been certified as natural, and they're one of the first brands to use cans without BPA-based liners. They make all their products in their own facilities to make sure they can control the process and the ingredients and the water itself. And they're sticklers about testing and analyzing everything to make sure you're getting quality in every can.
I mean, let's be honest. For me, it is all about the taste, but it's nice to know that the company is on top of this stuff. Their labels now even state that LaCroix is Whole 30. So if you've been hearing us talk about our LaCroix habit forever and haven't tried it out, head to LaCroixWater.com for a full list of retailers. That's LACROIXWater.com, just in case you didn't know yet. And you can also join the LaCroix community on social at LaCroixWater. You know, Sarah, it's funny, when we were setting this up, you were talking about how there was that phase where it was just the best we could do to get our kids not to belch at the table in a restaurant or whatever. It was just a total hot mess. And it kind of made me realize that we put so much pressure on ourselves to be the ones to teach kids all their social graces and manners. But I bet if you thought back, there are things that you learned not from your family of origin.
I agree.
Yeah. And one of them that sticks out in my head that I'm a super stickler for with my kids is putting my napkin in my lap. I did not start doing that until I spent a lot of time with a friend's family. And I think my mom had fine table manners. I felt like our family had, you know, we were very polite at the table. But putting my napkin in my lap consistently must have just been something she just, that wasn't a hill she was going to die on. Mm-hmm. And I totally picked it up from somebody else. So it's not all on us, you know?
I agree. And sometimes it takes being the odd man out when your kids start going to have a meal with another family. They look around and realize what they're not doing. And that's actually a great way to pick up on manners. And we're going to talk more about that kind of like when in Rome type of
yes.
social graces as we go. So I wanted to start with kind of a funny question. I would like you to describe a family dinner from a table manners perspective. So a dinner at your house, not a restaurant, when your youngest child was 12 months old. And so we will each do this, but you have 5 kids and I have 3. And so I just kind of arbitrarily picked the youngest is 1. How old is everybody else? And what does a family dinner look like?
Oh my gosh. Okay. I'm putting myself inside like the time machine. And I'm like, I'm doing that thing like in the movies where I'm like, my arms and legs are going, ah! And I'm like in that circuit. You know, have any idea what I'm talking about? Like,
yes,
I look
do.
Like I'm in a vault. Okay. Thank you for picking that up. Okay. So it would have been, the boys would have been 4, 6, 10, and 12-ish, right? Clara's the odd one out. So it never quite lines perfectly up, but that's about how old they were. And let's see. Well, I was kind of a stickler for always making the same meal. So I wasn't ever the one who was doing a different meal for everyone, except for maybe when the 2 oldest were really little. But I think by the time I got to the 3rd kid, I was like, I can't do that anymore. But they were all allowed to eat different versions of that meal based on what they liked the best. So often that would mean one kid was basically eating bread the whole mm-hmm. time, and one kid was just eating rice. And I remember they would grab food off each other's plates because they were allowed to trade at the table. And I had like 2 who were super obsessed with like roasted vegetables and 1 who always wanted meat and 1 who always wanted like potatoes or rice, whatever the starch was. And so they're just trading. The other thing I remember is that my oldest boys refused to properly use utensils. And I constantly had to tell them not to pick up peas with their fingers. They may still, honest to God, not use utensils. I don't always watch them when they eat outside of my table. So I have no idea. So in those days I would have been like desperately trying to get the older kids to keep a napkin in their laps and then actually use it, because there's nothing more infuriating than a kid with a napkin in their lap who wipes their fingers on their pants. And yep. I don't get that. And then the 1-year-old would probably just be throwing food on the floor. It's just so funny when I look back now, about the hang up I have about certain and that have then about certain things. And then the stuff I just let kind of go. Oh yeah. And the other thing that I would always be doing is just randomly going 4 on the floor.
Okay, so this is so perfect because I learned 4 on the floor from you. And for those of us, for those who haven't heard this, it just means no leaning in your chair. Can't lean forward or back. And so 4 chair legs on the floor. And I didn't learn this from you until like 2 years ago, probably. And
did I yell at you?
No, I don't lean back in my chair, Megan.
Okay.
It came up in an episode, I think. But it is the best shortcut for don't lean back in your chair. And I use it now all the time.
That's so funny because I feel like when we were at your parents' place, at one point I was sitting at those stools at their kitchen island.
Uh-huh.
And I want to say I told Reed 4 on the floor.
Yeah, maybe that's where I learned it. Reed is the chair leaner.
Yes. And he freaked me out because that chair is really high up off the ground.
Yeah.
And I want to say it's a tile or wood floor or something. And I'm just like, it's close to the table.
And it's just
so
habit.
That adds in more layer or danger.
It was your mom habit just launching in 4
on the floor.
So when my brother was a kid and leaned, my mom would eventually take his chair away. I think, Mom, you'll have to correct me, but that's what I remember, is like after a certain number of warnings, he would just lose his chair. And I guess he'd have to like kind of kneel or I don't know. I think that's kind of funny.
That's so funny.
So another thing I loved about what you just described is you're in that scenario at 12, 10 and 6, your oldest 3 are pretty much the age of mine now. Mine are 11, 9, and 6. And so a lot of what you described is actually my dinner table right now. And that includes eating with your hands and not using napkins. But we'll get to some of that in a minute because I still need to do ages 1, 3, and 5. And just what that would have looked like. Everyone would have been eating with their hands, no napkins at all, probably crying. Most likely kids eating something different from the adults on plastic plates. And we kind of served up at the counter in the kitchen. The one thing I remember from a good manners perspective is they were good about asking to be excused, even at that one age. That was one thing that I focused on. May I be excused, please? Not just getting up in the middle. Now, the weird thing is, I feel like it was more locked down when they were 3 and 5 than even it is now. And so that's a lesson in here is like, these things go in phases.
I love that. And one other thing that when you said, you know, you were serving them at the counter or like pre-serving it and passing it out, I remember kind of going through this up and down where I couldn't, like I was always trying to figure out the best system. So I was trying to think like, it's more efficient to just slop food on the plates. And I still go through this, to be honest, every now and then, depending on what I'm serving. It's more efficient just to put food on the plates while standing at the stove, right?
Yes.
But I have in my mind, the family dinner I want to have is like dishes on the table and everyone either being served as appropriate or serving themselves and passing the dishes. So that's been something where I don't do it the same every time. But we do practice with that. And we have been since Clara was little, like just practicing with the whole idea of here's how much food there is.
Yes.
Right. And that means if you take too much, the next person might not get enough or whatever. And it kind of like that, everyone judging like what everyone else is doing and making and doing their own portioning. And I don't think you have to get there anywhere near how young your kids were. But I'm glad that by now I finally got there, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, that's a perfect segue because I was going to ask, like, what are some things that have improved since those days? And then what are some things that we're still struggling with? And I can go first because this is what I was going to talk about is we have accomplished eating family style more often now. So that means like you described, some of the main dishes are on the table and they will say, please pass, or like, we'll say, would you like cheese on that and pass the cheese? So it has really helped. I hung on to that pre-portioning for a long time because I really don't like food waste. And so it felt like I could portion out. And also I have to say it wasn't great because I was prejudging my pickier kids by like, well, they're not going to eat that. So I'm going to put a little more fruit. Anyway, I am happy to say we're doing much more family style, not every night. Like you said, it kind of depends. I'll also say my kids are really great at these ages at like table conversation and the more social aspect of dining together. So they're used to sitting still for a full meal. They're still working on not interrupting and kind of taking turns, but we can actually have a family conversation. And for a lot of you, that feels like a faraway dream. So I'm here to tell you 6, 9, and 11, it's fun. Like our family dinner table conversations in general are fun. Where we still are struggling, and I wrote this down in our outline before you said it, is using napkins ever correctly or at all. There's still a lot of eating with hands and not necessarily from the youngest child. So that's why I was laughing when you were talking about your 10 and 12 year olds. I'm like, my 11 year old, I'm like, you cannot eat rice with your fingers. What? Like,
do you feel like somehow the oldest, like, because you were so busy with the youngers, like missed something? That's how what I always wondered, like, how is it my oldest two who seem to not care for utensils whatsoever, but the other ones all figured it out?
That might be true. And an addendum to not using utensils is when they use them, very clumsy. And Reed in particular he's like, I talk about this all the time, kind of an absent-minded professor type. So the things he pays attention to, he pays incredible attention. And then the things that slide over his head are like kind of mind-boggling. But sometimes I'll hand him a knife to spread something. It's almost like he's never seen it before. Like he just doesn't know what to do with it. So I have clearly failed in some regard, but the successes I'm celebrating. So how about you? What have you improved?
Well, just to point out really quick about the whole like family style and serving themselves thing. I actually ran across some research like 5 or 6 years ago about portion control. And so research has shown that the ideal is that kids serve themselves because they get better at realizing this is how much food I need to fill my particular stomach. But we all know like there's what's research says is the best. And then there's what we can actually manage at our tables. So I'm really glad I didn't stress about it in the days before I was trying it. And then I'm really glad that when I did start introducing it, it was just when it worked. Do you know what I mean? Like Because they're going to learn about themselves from doing that, even if it's just once a week. And not only that, but I started to learn, even if it was only once a week, by watching how much they gave themselves. Mm-hmm. Then like when I was serving, even now, like when I'm just like, everyone sit down, there's not room on the table for all this food, I'm just going to serve everything up really quick. I kind of know, well, Clara will probably take, you know, this many Brussels sprouts and yada, yada. So just doing it once in a while is really helpful.
I agree. Anyway. I agree. And I was going to add to that you'll realize very quickly whether your kids have mastered this when you go to a buffet line. Like it cracks me up to see kids in who physically they're able to manage a buffet line. They can balance the plate. But to watch them portion themselves, because there's no, at a buffet line, there's no like, oh my, there's enough. There's no limits. And so that's kind of funny. So it's a good thing to practice from a young age, but I agree. It doesn't have to be all or nothing.
Well, it's always funny to watch them too, after they get their plates back to the table and sit there and like, peel all the skin off the chicken because that's really all they wanted. And then they eat like five biscuits.
Yes.
And like me, when I go to a buffet, I skip over anything casserole-y or sloppy looking. Like something about eating out of a dish that a lot of other people have been scooping out of that's creamy really freaks me out.
Even though they haven't, like their germs haven't touched the spoon.
I know. Right? I don't know.
I don't have that issue.
I'm already a little bit suspicious of foods with like sauces. I don't know what they're going to taste like. Things that like a potato salad or like a noodle, like a pasta salad or something. If I don't know what that flavor is going to taste like, I don't want it to begin with. It's not really the germs. It's just the fact that we're all like scooping the sloppy food out of a, I don't know. Okay. Sarah, it's my neurosis.
You get to have your hangups. I have plenty of mine. That's just not one of them.
So if you followed me around at a buffet, it would be like fried chicken and biscuits, probably. That's probably
good.
All I'd eat.
That's good too.
Or bacon and eggs. Anyways, okay, so everyone does eat more neatly. Like I said, I still don't know if my older two boys consistently use a fork unless I'm telling them that they need to use a fork.
And remind us how old they are now.
Just they are 20 and almost 22. And I sometimes think like, maybe they're not, maybe I've just blocked them out. Like maybe even when they eat in front of me, they're eating terribly and I'm just like done. Like they're not my problem anymore. I really don't have any idea. I typically still have to remind all the kids to grab and use a napkin. So I'll bring out a stack of cloth napkins and then I sit there and watch as no one grabs one. And I'll be like, hey guys, like, and sometimes I'll just toss them at them. It's not the struggle it was because they'll use it if I like make them, but they'd still rather just wipe their hands on their pants or the tablecloth. And they still constantly rock back in their chairs and it still makes me nuts.
I just think it's really refreshing to hear this. Like, yes, we're trying. No, it hasn't all sunk in yet.
Exactly.
So I thought we could just take turns if we have any tips for parents of really little kids who are just getting started with table manners, other than what we've already said, which is it's a long haul. So anything come to mind?
Yeah. So one thing is just like our advice with basically everything parenting related is that it's okay to have like your thing and then work on that thing really almost to the exclusion of all else, because you'll have a chance to get to the other things. I mean, table manners are not life and death.
Right.
So if you are just feeling really passionate about wanting your kids to use a fork and you're going to let everything else go, like if that's your trigger, I think that's totally okay. I remember really wanting my kids to get to the point where they could reliably use regular cups without spilling. I did not like having sippy cups at the table. For lots of reasons. But, you know, with little kids, the skills involved with using a regular cup is very different. And so even when they were really little, I didn't serve, like even when they were at the age where they would have a sippy cup literally in every other circumstance at the table, they had regular cups. And there were more spills than there otherwise might have been. But for me, I wanted them to have that skill. So knowing that the spills were going to happen was just kind of part of it. And I would like portion out. I had those little plastic Tupperware cups that we all grew up with. You know, I think you know what I'm talking about. They're really easy for little hands to hold. They've got like a little lip on them that just makes them, and they're light. Mm-hmm. And I only poured an inch and I knew that I was going to have to get up and refill. And that was just, I was just like fixated on that one thing. The other thing I would say is that just know that for the, you know, if you've got little kids, like preschool aged, for the future in front of you, for as long as you can see down the road, dinner is going to be active. You aren't going to get and sit and like restfully eat your meal. It's just, if you go in with that expectation, you're going to be disappointed. You're going to be issuing reminders, monitoring, moving things out of the way of elbows, like constantly. And that's why going out for dinner without kids is such a miracle when you're at that stage. Like now I just take it so for granted that it doesn't almost matter. I could be at home or out, who cares, right? Either way, the experience is so similar. But think about how it is. Like even when you're a mom who's gotten kind of her sea legs about that active way, when you're with other people's kids, you're doing it. You're moving cups out of the way.
Yeah.
Like you're like always kind of anticipating what the next disaster is going to be. And your brain will not shift out of that mode for a while.
Yes. Yes. No, I really love that. And I would also say that when you're in that active mode, it doesn't mean that your kids aren't picking up on some manners. It just doesn't look like it. It's such a, it's such a long, slow haul that you're not going to see the instantaneous, you're not going to get instant gratification, but they are still picking up on things. And I love what you said about picking one or two things. We had some funny ones we focused on. So may I be excused, please, was a big one when they were little. So little that they could barely say those words. Like maybe a cute place, you know.
That's so cute.
And so that was a big one when I was growing up. And so it was just drilled in. So that one we worked on. We've also always said, thank you, chef. And we use the word chef kind of tongue in cheek. Like no one in the family is a chef. My husband is a very good cook. But we've gotten in the habit of thanking whoever prepared the meal by saying, thank you, chef. And it was really cute when they were little because they'd say, who was the chef for the mac and cheese? And it was mom. Oh, thank you, mom. I really like the mac and cheese. Who is the chef for the toast? It was like, well, dad made the toast, you know? So there was like a chef for every, you know, every dish. And they got in the habit of finding out who made it and thanking them. So we just worked on a couple little things when they were really little.
I love that. It's better than Owen, who used to rate, who used to rank my food. Did I tell you about that?
No.
He'd be like, yep, I give it a 9. I finally had to be like, Owen, I mean, it's funny, but
we're done.
Please, we're done. Yes, exactly.
Well, the cute thing is if they helped prepare something, even if it was just putting watermelon slices on a plate, they'd say I was the chef for the watermelon.
Aww, so that's adorable.
So that was a cute one. Thanking the chef, asking to be excused. I mean, we just didn't, you know, staying seated. Like our standards were pretty low when they were little. So a couple other tips I have if you're wanting to practice, if you have kids who like to make believe, I think making believe restaurant and tea party, if they're doing that anyway, and then just going over the top with manners, you know, napkin in your lap, pinkies up, please and thank you. And kind of like exaggerating, play acting those, I think can be a fun way. And some kids are curious, you know, why do you do that? Why do you say that? And it's kind of can give you a fun way to dialogue about that at a time where it's not an actual crazy meal.
Yeah.
And then of course, like we always hear, modeling the manners that you want to see, even if it's you and your spouse saying, please pass the potatoes, and everything around you is like in total chaos, that, you know, continuing to model the manners that you wish to see. You're not going to see the results today, but it's a good habit. I mean, even our own manners can slip when it feels like no one appreciates them. Right.
Right.
So thanking the person who prepared the meal or putting your napkin in your lap, just, you know, keeping those fresh. And then the last thing I was going to say is when you are out in public, I just want to say, I find it so much more noticeable to see parents loudly enforcing table manners with a kid who is clearly not ready for them, like a 2-year-old.
Yeah.
Than I do if that 2-year-old was just acting like a 2-year-old. Does that make sense?
Right.
I think sometimes moms feel pressure to, in a more public setting, you know, say please, say thank you, put your napkin on your lap, don't put the food over there, don't eat that with your hands. And of course, like whatever feels natural to you and your kid is fine. But I think sometimes we do it for public perception. And I actually think it's more awkward or more like cringy.
It's more cringy
than if the 2-year-old was just having bad manners. Because to me, like a 2-year-old with bad manners, I would literally not even notice. But sometimes you really notice when you see parents like trying to fit these much more mature manners onto a child who's not ready. And then it feels cringy to me.
Yeah. And I think that there's some space between letting your 2-year-old run around and throw food and loudly correcting them. You can just put the napkin in front of them or move the food out of their way quietly if they're not doing what they need to be doing. And I don't think anyone's going to notice. Like no one's going to be like, wow, she really should have loudly corrected her child because otherwise how will they learn? No one's paying that close of attention to you.
Yeah.
I don't think.
And I don't think anybody needs you to apologize for, there's no such thing as bad table manners from a 2 or 3-year-old. I think in the second half of the show, we're going to talk about like our older kids and how you do sometimes get cringy when they're publicly not the best manners, but I think no one is expecting you to like have a perfectly mannered toddler. So you can give yourself a pass, I think, there in public. Well, now this makes me want to like come to dinner at your house and have you to dinner at my house. I think that would be really, really fun. Like just be a fly on the wall.
There's no room at my table for anybody else. So I'm going to have to get a bigger table. It's going to need a leaf.
I mean, whoever's rocking in their chair, just take their chair away and I'll sit there.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about more general social graces. Megan, FabFitFun Fall is happening at my house right now. You like what I did there?
I love what you did there so much.
We got our FabFitFun Fall boxes a couple of weeks ago. And as usual, the stuff that was in it is already in rotation in my house. There's a 2-in-1 salt and pepper grinder from Epare that we're using on our dinner table already every night. And the Human and Kind body souffle smells so good that even my kids notice when I walk into a room after putting it on.
You smell tasty. That's all I got to say.
I don't know how they do it, but this box is full of premium full-size beauty, lifestyle, fitness, home, and wellness products. It retails for just under $50, but it always contains at least $200 worth of product.
I am loving the Aveda Damage Remedy Daily Hair Repair from the Fall Box. So, you know, as we're going into fall, I've been heat styling my hair a lot lately, and this really helps keep it smooth and healthy. And these boxes do sell out, so you're going to want to get on this soon. One cool thing is that once you sign up for FabFitFun, you can customize certain items in the box or add on others for a really great deal. And the frequency is perfect. Just 4 times a year, so you go long enough in between boxes to really need and appreciate the products when they arrive.
As of right now, the Fall Box is still available, and we've got a great offer for you. Use the code THEMOMHOUR to get $10 off your first box at FabFitFun.com. Again, use the code THEMOMHOUR, and you're going to get $10 off your first box at FabFitFun.com.
Sarah, I heard a rumor that you make your own kids' snack crackers now. Can this possibly be true?
Well, actually, my kids made their own fish-shaped cheddar crackers just this week with a recipe we got from America's Test Kitchen Kids and their new monthly activity kit, the Young Chefs Club.
Well, that is so cool. It is so fun to be able to demystify food with kids when they're at those ages where they're just curious about everything. I think my kids probably think fishy crackers hatch from like a giant cheddar fish or something.
Right? Yeah. I love it. Well, the whole theme of this month's Young Chefs Club is Say Cheese. And the box included a fun card game, a DIY ricotta science experiment, and a blindfold to do a cheese tasting. The kids loved it. And now I have a new recipe for stovetop mac and cheese that was delicious. We also loved last month's taco truck themed box, too. The recipes are kid tested and kid approved, and you also get access to America's Test Kitchen Kids' full digital library of recipes when you subscribe to the Young Chefs Club.
We've all heard that when kids contribute to family meals, they're more likely to try new foods, but it's not always easy to come up with fun ways to include kids when you're just doing your same old meal plan. Young Chefs Club provides the activities, experiments, recipes, and even a shopping list so that you can prioritize time in the kitchen with your kids without the hard, like, thinking part.
Right? And right now, America's Test Kitchen Kids has a special offer for our listeners. You're going to get 10% off your first subscription box when you go to atkkids.com/themomhour and use the promo code ATKKIDS10 at checkout. Again, to get your kids ages 5 and up excited about cooking and eating new things, visit atkkids.com/themomhour and use the promo code ATKKIDS10 to save 10% on your first subscription box from the Young Chefs Club. All right, so we're expanding the conversation here beyond the family table and talking about other areas of manners and social graces. And this is a big topic, so we'll touch on a few and see how far we get. But I was going to start with this question. Do you have areas of like courtesy, public courtesy, manners that you are especially tuned into for your own kids or other people's kids? Like basically your trigger behaviors?
You know, it's funny because when I thought about this question, I realized that what bothers me about other people's kids is different than my own. So for example, I've always been big on my kids saying please and thank you for really any measure of hospitality. And I am probably one of those annoying parents who's, I don't like to do the, what did you say? Like, what do you say? But more like, you know, they know by now that with the look or that I will kind of model saying thank you and please a lot. Cause I like that.
Yeah.
But I don't really even notice if other people's kids say that to me. Like I think I'd notice if they walked up and just grabbed something out of my hands, but I don't have the same, I'm not tuned into it the same way as I am with my own kids. But then on the other hand, like something that I probably unfairly judge other people's kids for is when kids are, and this is really hard to define, and I know it goes back to when I was a kid, but when kids are like too familiar with adults, and I don't exactly know, it's not exactly deference, but it's like, why is this 7-year-old talking to me like I invited him over to hang out with me, or like poking around in my fridge or pantry. Like there's just a familiarity. And I think it totally has to do with the way people host other people in their homes. Mm-hmm. And like, if you were at my house, I'd say, hey, Sarah, if you want to get something for yourself, go ahead and grab it. But until I've said that, it feels weird to me when a kid I don't know is in my kitchen doing that. And I have to really kind of tell myself sometimes, like just because when I was a child, I would have died before helping myself to a snack without being given permission. That probably came from how I was raised. Mm-hmm. And so it's really not fair of me to have that kind of like immediate, I don't know, like that gut check or whatever. Yeah. And there's also like, sometimes I've also had experiences where kids that I don't know well, say something really snarky or sarcastic to me. Mm-hmm. And that would have been what my mom would have called being fresh. Mm-hmm. Or there's just certain, there's words that she uses. I can't even remember now, but I remember I had a couple friends. She did not like the way that they talked to her. And that stuck to me. Like I still have that in my mind 40 years later, or like all these years later, that when I talk to a kid, I want them to talk to me like a kid. I don't even know what that means sometimes. Yeah, like I think, you know, it's weird. It's a weird thing to get a hang up about.
I think I know what you mean. And I also think it's a interesting generational and regional thing. We're not going to go down the calling adults Mr. and Mrs. We've actually done an episode where we've talked about that a couple of times. I'll link up, and it's a whole other conversation. But it is, there are big generational and regional differences about how comfortable kids are around adults. And I do think that West Coast style, where I live, tends to be more familiar and comfortable kids around adults. That said, I would like to think my kids are more deferential than some, just because I tend to be a, kind of like a structured person. And I'm, but anyway, I think it's very interesting. And I think you're smart to recognize that a lot of it comes from how you were raised, and that it's not, that's the thing about social graces, is it is still subjective, because who's deciding these rules? It's a constantly shifting moving target.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you point out the regional differences. And I think what it is that kids are so unself-conscious. In the Midwest, there are certain things I would never do with someone I didn't know well. Like I wouldn't speak to them a certain way in their home. I wouldn't act a certain way in their home if I didn't know them well. And most kids I don't know well yet, but they don't have that hang up. Mm-hmm. So like they're acting like they've been my buddy for 3 years. It's almost not even the adult kid thing. It's that they don't understand what it's like yet culturally to be Midwestern. That's really what it is, I think.
Interesting.
And so they're acting in this kind of way where I'm like, what now? Like, you know, they're just too familiar. I don't know how to put it. I'm sure my kids have been too familiar with other people's parents. I'm sure there are parents who think my kids act like they want to hide in the corner and are too reserved. So again, it's one of those things where I think just recognizing why something triggers you is usually why.
Totally. And I'm fascinated by the fact that this even triggers you, because it's just not something that I've noticed or is on my radar. So, so the first thing I thought of in terms of something I just notice with my own kids or other people is I'm always aware if my kids are being physically in the way, or rowdy is not really the right word. I don't have really super rowdy kids, but like blocking a doorway, for example, or like walking through a doorway and being completely ignorant of the fact that other people are coming. And as my kids get older, this feels even more kind of cringy to me. My 11-year-old is the size of an adult. So it's like a large body to manage in space. Yeah. And I know that this comes with maturity, but as a, when we're talking about personal triggers, I am always super aware if my kids seem in the way or physically like too big for the space they're in. So if we're like in line somewhere or in a small space, that's when my more controlling part, you know, I'm like, stand still, stand over here, or just go outside. It's not that I expect them to have manners that are like over the top good. I would just rather not go to that place or not be in that space if we can't be there comfortably and politely. Does that make sense? So I get really,
and
I would probably think the same of other people's kids too. So too rowdy or too like blocking the space is the best I can kind of explain.
Well, and I think when you have three or more kids, I definitely think there was a point for me where when I realized how many of us there were, I just became super aware of how much we could take over.
Yeah.
Like because even if it was just all of us standing, we still are this mass of people, and it does start to feel like you're taking over. And when we moved to the city, so we lived in a small town, then we moved to Chicago. That was when I really started to realize that my kids didn't understand things like how to navigate a city sidewalk with other people.
Right.
They would just walk right down the middle of the sidewalk
yes.
because they had no awareness of the fact that like there's lots of other people and you have to share space. And because there were so many of us, I spent so much time physically grabbing them and moving them out of the way or like remind, like I'd be walking like single file,
yes.
single file, like muttering that under my breath. And I'm sure people thought I was nuts, but like I was very aware of
that's me. That's exactly what I'm talking about. The walking, the taking up space that isn't yours is just not granting equal space to other people in the same space as you is like, that's the trigger for me. And my kids are, we are in that phase that you described where they're physically bigger. And to be clear, I'm not talking about like a wiggly two or 3 year old. Again, we're now talking about the things that as they get older that we're like, let's work on that. So that's
There's a cluelessness about kids until they're like much older.
That's exactly
what it is. But their bodies have outgrown their minds, right?
That's exactly what it is. Another trigger I have, and this is actually more with adults, is I'm going to use loud cell phone talkers as kind of an umbrella statement, but I think there's other ways to do this thing. And it's sort of a disregard or a not giving a hoot about other people in the surrounding space. So people who talk loudly on a cell phone, especially if it's colorful language and profanity, I find so incredibly rude. And I will point it out to my kids because it's usually adults doing it. And the funny thing is, I actually am very liberal about profanity in my home. I have a real liberal stance on, I don't really like attach a lot of significance to the traditional like 4-letter words.
Right.
I mean, my kids know them. They know like what happens when they're used in certain situations. But I am not, I mean, I swear around my kids and my, anyway, but it's not the swearing. It's the disregard for who's around you. And I guess it really, it's sort of the verbal equivalent of the space issue. It's kind of the same thing. It really drives me bonkers and it is so rude to me. So it's not something my kids do yet, but it's something that triggers me with adults that I'm always like so aware of.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally makes sense. And I think that, it's again, it's always just about courtesy, right?
Yes.
That's like kind of what it comes down to and how we interpret courtesy.
Yeah.
And that is what manners are for.
Yes. Agreed. So I thought it might be kind of fun to touch on if there are other areas that we are more relaxed about or that don't trigger us. And I can go first here. I mentioned the whole Mr. or Mrs. to adults, and I did not grow up calling adults by Mr. or Mrs. and I don't make my kids do it. I mean, I think that's case specific. There are some adults, teachers, of course. Sometimes if it's someone of a particular generation or maybe I might ask what they like to be called, but I haven't taught my kids that all adults need to be given a title, ma'am, sir, miss, Mr., Mrs. And for some of you, depending on where you live, that is like way out there. But that's, I just, for where I grew up and where my kids are growing up, to me, what feels more natural is to teach other ways to respect your elders and respect people in general. So we talk a lot about what that looks like, not interrupting, like what you were talking about, Megan, the familiarity. So we work on respect in other ways, but I'm pretty liberal, I guess, when it comes to the titles. I just have a more open-ended definition of what that looks like to respect. So that's one area I'm not strict about at all. How about you?
Well, it's funny that you said that because I thought to myself, I don't really have a hard and fast rule about that either. I think for me, it's kind of like the difference of like, you know, someone's name is Peter, but you don't know if they go by Peter or Pete. And whenever I am with my kids and they're with another adult, if it's someone I don't know well, because with people that I know well, I kind of know what they want to be called, but I'll just be like, oh, is it okay for them to call you blah, blah, blah? Or what would you prefer to be called? And then I mean, nobody really wants to be called Mr. or Mrs. anymore. Like that's not really a thing. And I've had parents who insist on their kids calling me not only Mrs., but my married last name, which I haven't had now in years, and I am no longer a Mrs. And I find that awkward. I mean, I've never really wanted to be called a Mrs. or a Ms. So I don't assume at all that anybody else would want to be, but I just feel like, just like with a nickname or any other preference, like I would just as soon ask.
Sure.
But it's not a big deal. And hardly ever is it, like hardly ever does the other person care anymore. They'll just be like, well, call me Mary or whatever. Right. I'm also really relaxed about expecting my kids to spend a lot of time talking to adults. And I thought about this, like one thing I've really noticed as an adult, looking at kids who the different sizes of families, I do think people with smaller families and especially only kids, the kids are more accustomed to talking to the adults. They just are. So you can kind of tell they're more comfortable. Maybe they've been more trained or they're just more used to it. And my kids, you would think were feral half the time because not only were there five in my family, but there were I have, you know, all these siblings, and between us, we have like 16 kids. So when we would all get together, all the kids got off the hook.
Yeah.
Like, they weren't expected to hang around talking to us. They had other stuff going on, and I never forced it. And I don't know if that was right or wrong. Now that they're getting older, I can see how they're developing those individual relationships with aunts and uncles in their own ways. But for a long time, they were just part of like a mass of kids. They didn't want to sit and talk to us, mm-hmm. and I didn't make them. And mm-hmm. I don't, like, I look at it now and go, you know, I was one who grew up thinking I didn't have a particularly close relationship with either of my grandmothers when I was little. And maybe that was because I was the, you know, the caboose at the end of a long line of kids. Maybe it's because by the time I came along, they'd already put in all that one-on-one time with the older kids. Maybe it was because I just flew under the radar. There was always the go kiss grandma when I got there, but then I would kind of slip away and just not really spend a lot of time talking to them. And so I don't know. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. It's just a thing.
Yeah. Well, and I like that you said that it wasn't something that you chose to force. And I think your kids obviously have and are learning to talk to adults regardless. Right. Yeah, I like that. I'm trying to think if I have made a point to encourage or require it, or if my kids have just, they've had some practice probably in just the families we hang out with. We don't have gaggles of cousins. So that, like you said, that's a big difference. I think I usually give them a little pep talk when we're going into a mixed age situation that, you know, I expect you to make conversation when adults are chatting with you. I get cringy when adults expect kids to sit there and shoot the breeze in a way that they're not ready for. And so I really appreciate it when adults can ask, you know, exchange pleasantries with a kid, but understand that they're not going to talk about like the weather for half an hour.
Yes.
And they may not want to talk about their favorite subject in school, you know? So
right.
I think I'm on board with you. Although it is something that I noticed because some of my kids are better at it than others. So,
well, and my kids all definitely knew how to be around adults. Like, we would sit down at a table and eat with grandparents and aunts and uncles and stuff like that. Or they could answer a few questions or whatever. It's just, they just weren't really expected to hang out.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I know that families, sometimes it's very different. So it's just something that I become aware of now that it's changing. Like, Clara and my sister Catherine write letters to each other all the time.
Aww.
And like, I love that. And it's not the kind of thing that either that any of us made happen. It wasn't like an expectation she was going to do that from the time she could pick up a pen. It's something the two of them worked out together that they wanted to do that.
Yeah.
So, you know, it just feels different and a little more natural to me.
Yeah, totally. Well, this is, you know, related, an extension, but what else feels cringy now that your kids are older and you're out in public? What are the manners that they're still working on or that just are like.
Well, I have to tell you really quickly that Owen thinks it's very cringy when I say cringy.
Oh, that's funny. Sorry, Owen. So,
it's okay. He doesn't listen, but he's a couple of times made a comment like, Mom, you say cringe. He said, you say cringe way too much. And that's just totally cringe. That's how he says it. So I don't know. Anyway. So back to the other topic, my kids can still be so awkward when talking to adults. Which I just set up this whole like kind of almost defense for not making them do it. But even given that, they've had plenty of experience. Mm-hmm. They've had plenty of opportunities to learn. And they can still just be like awkward. Like sometimes it borders on what could be seen as rudeness. Mm-hmm. And they're not all awkward in the same way even. Like some are kind of shy. Some are goofy. Like some don't talk at all. And I know they don't want to be rude. So I just try to walk that line between coaching them on how to act around others without like shaming them for the mm-hmm. fact that they're preteen and mm-hmm. teenagers and that that's just awkward.
Yeah.
So it's hard. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, I agree with that. My oldest is particularly good at conversing with adults and kind of sort of came out of the womb like a mini adult in a lot of ways, which can make her more awkward around her peers. I will say
right.
I have witnessed more awkwardness around peers than around adults with that child. And then my second is the opposite. So I totally hear what you're saying about being perceived as rude, especially when it comes to small talk. I'm like, I wish we could like wave a magic wand and give our kids just the small talk, like the basics, just enough to fly under the radar and not be seen as rude. But it's hard. Not all kids come out that way. And, you know, as a society, maybe we have expectations about small talk that are dumb anyway. Who knows?
Yeah.
Also cringy for me is the blocking of space, like I mentioned, in particular with my adult-sized tween, where I'm just like, like you said, walk on the right side of the sidewalk. I will say that Violet still belches very loudly in public, and I probably should feel cringy about that, but I'm either tired after parenting three children, or she's just too charming, but it's kind of funny. I mean, I don't think that she's ever done it in a situation that I was truly horrified, but it could happen because I don't think I've corrected the behavior enough. And it's far enough, you know, few and far between that when it happens, it's just really surprising and funny. But she would not think twice about belching loudly anywhere.
That's so funny. Well, and what's funny about that is like, if my kids did that, I would grab them by the ear and like march them off the sidewalk probably, but I'm not sure I would even notice if your kid did it. It's just like a totally, there are certain things I just have a very different, it would also depend on whether they did it on purpose or not. Because yeah. I've had boys in particular who have like tried to insert bodily noises into things for the funny factor. And I shut that down, like, because otherwise it would be bedlam.
Yes.
Imagine if all four of them decided they were going to do that.
Yes.
Yeah. I'd be that mom.
Yes.
With the four, you know, boys, rowdy. I guess I'm already at.
You are that mom, but no, I know what you mean. And the funny thing about Violet is she's actually very astute at reading social situations. She's very socially savvy. So she probably, and she gets embarrassed very easily. So she probably won't need to be taught not to do that in certain situations because she's really aware of how she's perceived by others. So I guess if she wants to belch loudly and laugh to make her brother and sister laugh at home, it's not a hill I've wanted to die on so far. It's kind of funny. Out of this little thing. Okay, so a follow-up to this is now we're out in public and our kids are doing things that are either downright rude or more likely in this gray, cringy area. Do we correct them like right then and there? Do you talk about it later? I can go first on this one.
Sure.
So we're talking about our say please, say thank you, say excuse me, and do we do that right in public? And I would say I'm probably a little bit of both meaning right then and there, and then also pep talks and debriefs. I aspire to be the type of parent who doesn't prompt, remind, or scold in the moment, but I can't help it. Sometimes I do. So, and sometimes it's about my own ego or the way I think I'm being perceived, but I do sometimes say please, say thank you, say you're welcome. Mm. And I kind of aspire to not do that, but that's where I am right now. I think best practice wise, what I like to do is a lot of pep talks before we go into a situation. Reminder, you're going to be meeting people, you know, new people. Please make eye contact, shake their hands, whatever I'm reminding them of, table manners or whatever. And then debriefs after, like if they need a little pep talk after and they didn't handle it well, you know, I would probably be gentle because the moment's over. They're not in trouble or anything, but like, hey, next time, here's what we want to go for. So that's kind of how I am. It's a hodgepodge. And I probably, I don't think there's a lot to be gained, especially with older kids, from the in the moment reminders. It can be embarrassing for them. It certainly doesn't help reinforce the good manners. So I don't know why I do it, but I do.
Well, and that's what I guess I was going to say is it totally depends on the age and the setting. So yes, if I reminded William, who's 15, to say thank you, if I was like, so what do you say? He'd be mortified and probably really grumpy about it. And it would be the most insincere thank you ever. So like, there's no point. But Clara, you know, sometimes if I catch your eye and kind of raise my eyebrows and do a little nod, she'll be like, oh, please, or thanks, or you're welcome. Mm-hmm. Although because I harped on it so much when my kids were little, they're all pretty like flawless about remembering please and thank you. Sometimes excuse me, not so much. So to your point about though, like, you know, say thank you, what do you say? I think that the other way to do that when kids are really little is to kind of model in a way that if they notice you, they can chime in. So like you might be the first person to say, thank you for having Owen over to play, but he's already been primed to know that that means, oh yeah, thank you. Right. So even if he forgot, just by me saying it, and it's sincere coming from me, and then it's also sincere coming from him. That always felt different to me than that sort of sing song, like, what do you say? Which I've also done.
But. Or the forcing, which is kind of back to what I was talking about in the first half. It can be awkward to watch a parent force those things out of their kids. But when you model, you remove that awkwardness. And I'm glad you brought that up because I do that a lot. Well, I do it with please and thank you, but I especially do it with apologies and excuse me's. Mm. That's where if we've knocked something over, bumped somebody, I definitely am the one to model the apology. Sometimes a kid just really isn't, they're not developmentally there to think I did that. I apologize. Right. And forced apologies are just not my thing. So I'd much rather model that because I am sorry. I am sorry we were mm-hmm. rude or we were too loud or we knocked over this thing rather than enforcing that for my kids. So I'm glad you brought up the modeling thing.
Well, it's just like we were just talking about with their bodies, like their bodies have outpaced their brains. Yeah. So their bodies are getting bigger, but they're still clueless. Like they're walking around with their heads in the air thinking about something else. They might have no idea that had they walked more carefully, they wouldn't have yeah. knocked that thing over.
Yeah, the cause and effect is pretty new.
Yes, exactly. It's weak.
Yeah, it's a weak correlation there.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that is always a great tactic. I also think I try to really praise the positive, not in the moment necessarily, but after. And my kids are great at restaurants. We've eaten out a lot and they're really fun to take to restaurants. And I make a huge deal of eye contact when ordering. That's another thing where it's like people looking down at their phones or down at the menus. And because I spent so many years as a server, eye contact, I think, is really important in general. But when you're ordering at a restaurant, it's like, to me, it's a non-negotiable. And so my kids have, from a very young age, been good at making eye contact, ordering clearly, you know, and that's a great place to practice. And then it's fun to, you know, to celebrate after and say that those are such nice manners. Like, thank you so much. And I do that with other kids too, that are not my kids. I would never coach them on bad manners, but I will compliment a kid who's not my kid on nice manners. Cause you were saying at the top of the show that you don't always notice when it's other people's kids. And I don't think I notice the bad, but I will notice the good sometimes. A kid yes. who comes into my house and just is full of pleases and thank yous. And yes. I will totally compliment that. To them and then also to their parents, if I think of it, like, you know, yeah. such nice manners.
And super polite kids are often super polite in a way that your kids aren't just yes. because of all the things we've talked about yeah. today with how different things matter to different people. So I totally notice things other kids, even if it's the only thing they do well,
yeah.
right? That's the thing that stands out. And I will be like, wow, you know, yes, what nice manners you have.
Yeah.
Pointing it out to the parents is always great. And to your point about servers, though, I just wanted to say really yeah. quick that you know, servers, probably because so few parents do that, all the things you just discussed, they tend to defer to asking mom
yeah.
or dad what the kids want. And so sometimes I have to make consciously remember I'm not going to parrot what my child wants.
Yeah.
Like, and I'll kind of look to them and maybe they mumble and it's yeah. like, you know, excuse me. Like, it's so I guess the point is that this stuff takes time and lots of practice.
It does. And restaurants yeah. are nice for practice because you're not going to see that person again. So right. It's like a pop quiz. Like, how are our manners doing? Let's check. Let's go out
right,
to eat.
Right.
One thing we haven't touched on yet that I want to real quick before we wrap is, I forget if it was you or Kelsey who brought this up when we were prepping this episode, but the loud pointing and commenting on others in public.
Oh,
you have a funny
gosh.
Story about this, right?
Well, I mean, my son, so Isaac, who basically is so quiet and reserved now, but this was during his slightly less quiet and reserved phase mm-hmm. of ages baby through like seven. Yeah, he pointed at a woman and said, why does she get to be so fat? And the weird thing is he said it like an accusation, mm-hmm. like he was jealous of her or something. Like the way he said it was not only super embarrassing because he's commenting on someone's size and we're out in public and there's no way she didn't hear him. Of course
right.
she did. But the way he said it was kind of funny because it was so unexpected.
Right.
It was like, why does she get to be, you know, it was
and I'm
so
sure he was
bizarre.
Two or something really
yeah,
little.
He was little, like two or three. Yeah. Yeah. He had a great vocabulary and he spoke really, really clearly then too, which meant that I couldn't like a lot of embarrassing moments
yeah.
were completely just out in the open.
Yeah.
And I don't remember now what I did. I know that I was mortified and I had no idea what to do. And I don't know what the answer is because there really isn't. There's not really a good way to handle something like that without either drawing more attention to yourself or correcting your kids for something that they didn't mean to, you know,
yeah.
they didn't mean to be rude or kind of patronizing the other person.
Yeah.
Like what could I have said loudly in front of this other person that would have made them feel better, which is the point, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't remember what I did. Probably nothing.
Well, and I think this is one of those things that kids, every kid does it, you know, loudly points or comments on, you know, says embarrassing things in public. And then most grow out of it within a relatively short amount of time. But I would file it under the pep talks, you know, like the reminders later. There's not much you can do probably to, I don't know.
In the moment, I think there's not a lot you can do with stuff like that. I guess it, to me, it's always like putting myself in the position of courtesy to the other person. Like, mm-hmm. what would I want if I were that person? Well, probably not to hear the mom now lecture her kid in front of me about me. Like, that doesn't sound great.
Yeah.
And sometimes there's just not a great solution, especially if you have a kid who really can't be reasoned with yet.
Right.
And sometimes that's, you know, really what we're dealing with. Right. Yeah.
And I think like 5 and 6 is a great age for kids who start to have more awareness of, you know, that reciprocity. Like, how would it mm-hmm. feel if someone pointed and laughed at your hair, you know,
right.
or, you know, we don't point at people in public. It's hard though. I mean, even older kids, I can think of other awkward, embarrassing things, asking questions, you know, asking somebody how much money they make or asking, like, there's all kinds of these, like social no-nos that are harder for kids to learn. Of course, Isaac's example is like the classic of a 2-year-old, but there are things an 8 or 10-year-old might do or say that are completely, you know, inappropriate.
And you can't necessarily pre-coach for all those things.
Exactly.
Because you don't see them coming until they came and went. I mean, it would never have occurred to me that, especially at that age, that I would have to like prepare for that.
Yeah.
And I've also heard from people who, for whatever reason, are noticeable in public. Maybe they have a facial feature that is different or something like mm-hmm. that. Like, I've heard different things. Like, some people want to be engaged and like would rather a little kid came up and asked them a question.
Mm-hmm.
Others don't want that. And so it's like, you can't go in with this sort of like one size fits all idea about how the other human is going to receive your clueless child.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's in those moments, it's just like solidarity. We've all been there. Try to make the best of it that you can in that moment, putting yourself in the other person's shoes. And that's when I almost take my kids out of the equation entirely.
Yeah. And then we can do a lot of modeling. We can do a lot of talking at home about differences. And mm-hmm. I think when kids see someone in a wheelchair, for example, little kids would have questions or point. And I think it's great to let kids know that it's okay to have questions or to be curious when they see something that's very, very different. But there is a way to do it that doesn't make anybody feel bad. And that is, there's so much nuance in that it's something that I guess we're all still learning, but especially little kids are learning because they have no filter. They start out with no filter and we want to help them not only have a filter, but have like a humanity and a kindness behind the filter. So it's not just,
not parroting.
Yes, right? Exactly. Yeah. But it's coming from a place of compassion and, you know, how would you feel if you were in someone else's shoes? And that takes time.
It does, but that's the definition of manners. Yeah. So I think we solved it.
Did we?
No.
All right. I'm coming over for dinner, so you better kick somebody out of their chair.
Okay, well, this was fun. And I feel like this segues really nicely into our Cue It Up for the week. I went all the way back to episode 5.
Oh my gosh. So
it was about teaching manners to kids. It's an episode that's over 5 years old. So not only will everyone cringe about the sound quality, but I think listeners are also going to get a kick out of hearing how different things really were for us back then, because, you know, our kids were like much smaller then. And mm-hmm. I wonder too, if the way things really were are maybe a little different from the way we think we remember them.
Yeah.
And we also delved into some more practical stuff like thank you notes and party RSVPs and probably some other topics that we didn't manage to get to today. So again, that's episode 5.
Yeah. So it would be from spring of 2015, and literally you would just scroll back in your app as far as you can possibly go and laugh. Okay, well, Megan, this was really fun, and everybody, the show notes as always are at themomhour.com. We will link up that Cue It Up and anything else we think is relevant, and we will talk to you guys soon.